From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Shake it, don't break it. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. With her newest film, this year's Oscar-winning In a Better World, Danish director Susanna Bier will undoubtedly find bigger audiences for her unique mix of intimacy and sudden flashes of emotional violence. A Dogma 95 practitioner, she's moved into using the medium in fuller and subtler ways. Susanna, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Is the actual title Heaven?
No, actually it's funny because it reads Heaven when you read the Danish title, but the Danish title is Hævnen, and that means the revenge. And we had a few titles, and when we finally got to In a Better World, it was too late because the revenge had been all over the Danish newspapers. So we had to stick with that in Denmark. But I actually prefer In a Better World. You know, the movie does deal with revenge, so it's not an irrelevant title. It's just the dark version of the same title, like the
Yes, it really is. It is the dark version of the same title. Since you're talking about it, if you can explain what In a Better World is about.
You can say thematically it is about revenge and forgiveness. Since we're talking about those topics, I might as well just address it thematically. It is really about two boys, two very sort of unusual and very, and boys that are not necessarily likely to become friends, and under different circumstances might not have become friends, but because they're both terribly unhappy each in their own way, they become very good friends, and the lives of their families changes radically because those two boys have met each other. The father of one of the boys is a doctor in Africa, and he's kind of the, in a way, the main character, but his life is heavily influenced by the two boys meeting each other.
I would say, like your previous Oscar-nominated film, After the Wedding, these are films that both kind of start and then 20 minutes into the film become different movies entirely. And that seems to be something you're kind of attracted to as a filmmaker.
Well, I'm attracted to dramatic structure which is convincing but not predictable. And I'm attracted to dramatic structure which sort of takes you in your hand, but somehow takes you somewhere else than what you anticipate. And it's not as if, you know, it's a kind of fun thing, because those kind of thing, when dramatic structure are unpredictable, the danger is always that you are cheating audience somehow. And I never want to do that. And I think the reason that we don't cheat the audience is that our stories are always character-based, so none of the decisions made in the movie are something that a character wouldn't do. And because it's something a character would do, and actually people make the weirdest decisions in real life, or the most sort of unpredicted decisions, sometimes the story takes you places where you don't expect it.
But I guess one of the things that I kind of feel this comes from is being a proponent of Dogma 95, which is also about subverting rules and doing whatever you could to make people experience a movie different than they were used to. One of the kind of unspoken tenets of Dogma 95 was to move away from conventional narrative, because there are fairly predictable structures in conventional narrative, and your films, for example, don't tend to do that.
Well, I think it's an interesting discussion, because I think, you know, if you look at thrillers, I think in a way my movies might be dramas with a thriller skeleton, in a way. And I think if you kind of look at thrillers, they often have a distinct logic but a pretty unpredictable development. And I think, you know, I it's not like a conscious choice, but now when you ask about it, I'm actually thinking that it might be in the back of both Anders Thomas Jensen, the screenwriter,
and
myself.
You worked with several times.
Yes. It might be in the back of the way we relate to things that there is a certain, you know, like a Pandora box thing, which is thriller-like.
It's thriller-like, but it's also a way of confounding expectation.
Yeah. But I think, you know, that it's, you know, as a filmmaker, you don't at all times want to have an active discussion with your audience, because you also at some time just want to go with the logic of the characters. And then you can step aside and think, okay, how is the audience going to perceive that? How much does the audience now understand? But it's a kind of a mix, because if you step too much to the side of the audience, I think you become very, you know, you become very predictable. You kind of anticipate the response rather than go with a natural storytelling.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm talking to director Susanna Beer about her Oscar-winning film, In a Better World.
I think what I mean by this is I was thinking about the American version of Brothers, which is very conventional in terms of the way the movie is structured. You know, it's a three-act structure. And to that extent, comparing your films, there's almost, in opera terms, like an overture that kind of sets up an emotional tone, but not a story tone.
I think if you were to analyze them one next to the other, you would find that the structure is not that extremely different. It's in the details that they are different.
But I would say you take more time than that movie does. There's a, I don't want to use the word leisurely, but a kind of a deceptive element of what's going on here, which mm-hmm. again is getting back to what you're saying about the thriller aspect. That's something that thrillers often do. It's a way to sort of invite us into the movie and then give us something else. And I think, and you're going to tell me I'm wrong here because that's what you do, that's, for example, the difference between Jim Sheridan's version of Brothers and yours.
It's really hard. It's actually very, very hard for me to analyze that, because it's like, you know, how do you compare your own kid to your friend's kid? So, you know, you can't do that because you know you're so emotionally entangled.
Well, if your friend has dressed up his kid in the same clothes and giving the kid the same name, then you might want to compare it a little bit. And it's funny because as we're talking about this, there's almost a kind of a brotherly structure in a better world between the two boys and their fathers. There's that kind of brotherly parallel.
Yes, that's right. There is a fascination, I think, in all of our films, and I actually think it's from both Anders Thomas Jensen and from myself. There is a fascination with male relationships, with brothers and fathers and fathers. And I feel, in a funny way, I feel that I understand it almost better than I understand women, which is sort of frightening.
It's funny you said, because the women are almost always outsiders in these relationships, you know, and the women are not understood by the man.
Well, isn't that true?
I can only speak for myself, and apparently for you as well. But I'm fascinated by that, and that those parallels where there's a kind of a sort of a kindred spirit between men who aren't brothers, and this sort of tribal aspect to that too.
Firstly, I think that the women in all of the films are significantly strong women. And
some kids are stronger than the men in a lot of ways.
And I think in a way that, you know, if you were to look at all the films, you might find that because they're pretty strong, because they are all pretty self-contained, we find that we need to spend less time explaining them than we need to spend explaining the men.
It's The Treatment. We're still fighting. My guest is director Susanna Beer. Her new film is In a Better World. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. But talking about this movie and the movies you've done outside of the dogma strictures, what I find so fascinating about this film is, as I was saying before we start, the light is a character here. I mean, it enters the movie before any of the characters that we get to know do. And I was fascinated by that as a directorial choice.
You know, it was kind of fascinating because I knew, before we even started prepping, I knew that I wanted the landscape and the actual physical land to be an active player in the movie. I wanted to be a character like the human characters. And I was very keen to, like, for example, the location that they all live in beautiful locations, but also in the very accurate kind of beautiful locations. And I wanted for Africa to be significantly beautiful and yet convey the starkness that it had.
And the brutality,
yes. And there's also, actually, I find that in Denmark there is an undercurrent of the brutality in all the images. Behind the serene beauty that is in the Danish images.
Well, I felt that too in the way that shadow exists in the Danish landscapes, that there's an openness in everything in Africa. And when we get back into the city, there's an ominous quality to that. It's weird because brutality in Africa is open. I mean, you know what the relationships are. When you go back to Denmark, there are things hidden, just like what you're saying.
Exactly. That's right. The shadows come, like it looks beautiful and sunny, and then the shadow comes and you realize that it's not all what you seem, which is sort of in a way what the movie wants to tell.
But it's funny, though, because there's a romantic capital R aspect to the first 10 minutes or so of the movie with Elisha's father, who's almost like a character of a David Lean movie, who's there, like, who shows an enormous amount of physical bravery and is very silent and very sure about himself doing his job. And when he goes back home to Denmark, that all disappears.
It's interesting because we did a lot of research and we spoke to Doctors Without Borders and one of the things they said was that you have these people who are so self-contained and they are like generals. I mean, they're doctors and they're like generals in a huge big army, like doing everything and being so much in control. And then they come home and it's quite hard to make, like mentally make ends meet, like making the everyday life feel as meaningful and as important and feel as you know, if you've been away for a long time, you often feel that you are not really, you don't necessarily serve such a big purpose at home anymore. It's very interesting.
I find it to be the most fascinating that he's constantly touching his sons. You know, there's this hunger because when he's touching people in Africa, it's basically to operate, to heal somebody. There's like a life or death aspect to it. And when he's home with his children, he's embracing them and stroking their hair and kissing them constantly. And I wonder if that was a direction from you or if he just figured that on his own or if that was in the script where that came from.
I think Michael Persbrandt, as an actor, is a very physical actor. And I think he tends to touch, like, he has a kind of very physical thing to him. It's also what you are like as a parent. It's, I find it really endearing. I don't find it needy. I find it kind of warm and kind.
This is more than anything you've done, a real occasion of contrast. And as viewers, we're aware of the contrast constantly. And that when he's in Africa, he basically isn't really talking to anybody except to issue orders or to figure out what's going on. And when he comes home, there isn't that sureness of speech. I mean, he's constantly trying to figure things out. And it's almost like the only real relationship he has to anything is to just sort of hold these children close to him because that means so much.
Yeah. But don't you think that it often is like that? Don't you think that it often is like that, that you have a certain, you have like a certain ability to do things and to whether to create or in his case to heal, and you have, there's a certain side of you which is this sort of outgoing, energetic, very mature, and then at some point you also, there's also like a strong desire to be loved in a way, and I think he expresses that desire in a very human and convincing way.
I just think about that great scene where he and his wife have to go to deal with Elisa's school and he just sits there and you kind of, there is no command in his presence, that's all gone, he doesn't quite know what to do with his hands. It's a fascinating thing to watch.
Yes.
So you like your movie?
You know, I've always been much more relaxed when about people's opinion about my films than I have about people's opinion, for example, about my cooking. Like, you know, you're kind of allowed to say whatever you think about my film, and I don't really get offended. I'd be sort of intrigued, but I have a pretty sort of good, healthy understanding of it, and I'm, you know, I can see flaws and things like that, but I'm okay with that. But I'm much more sensitive about other stuff.
Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to director Susanna Beers about her cooking and also about her new film In a Better World. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is Oscar winner Susanna Beer, her new film as director is In a Better World.
I always thought of Dogma films as kind of like going to film school. And they exist almost first in a lot of ways as theme and character. And sometimes those joints, you know, those kind of seams are visible. And the films become more and more confident. I guess I'm so struck with that in A Better World because there are so many undercurrents. It's a film that demands to be watched several times.
In A Better World is not a Dogma film. The Dogma film obeys to a set of 10 rules.
But you got to break one of the rules. If you wanted to.
I actually got my break prior to the Dogma films, but internationally, yes.
I mean, depart from some of the Dogma rules. I mean, you could do that as a filmmaker. You were allowed to depart from...
No. I mean, if you do a Dogma film, if you want a certificate, you have to obey those 10 rules. And so Open Hearts was a Dogma film. It kind of... and that's the only one I've done. And most people have only done one film because the educational experience of making a Dogma film, the complete austerity of making a Dogma film is very helpful and very sort of rewarding. But I think once you've done it, I'm not sure you wouldn't do it again.
But the films have a... For example, talking about In a Better World, there's a real kind of almost ethereal quality to it in a lot of ways. I mean, it's interesting to see silences with music in a movie. I mean, it's a dumb, obvious thing to say, but it's just fascinating to watch that. I mean, having watched Open Hearts and then just recently and then watching the new movie after, you think, wow, so there's like a score and there's a cutting in the shot. And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why you only want to do one, because the thing is, there is a real joy to actual filmmaking. There is a real joy to using the media. And with Dogma, you can't do that because of all the rules. And I love that. I mean, I love actually all the things you said about applying the music to right plays and things like that. But the thing is that the other extreme is nauseating. When you kind of go, you occasionally sit in movies and you kind of go, you know, I don't want to kill the villain on the screen. I want to kill the composer, and you know what I mean. That's where it's over the top. That's where it's not actually using the media to a beautiful result. It's just abusing it. And I guess that Dogma sort of, in a way, at least taught me a kind of a very intriguing balance of those two things.
It's got to offer you judgment, because one of the things I'm really aware of in this film more than the others is also the use of sound. I mean, when the boys are sitting on that rooftop, mm-hmm. and the wind, mm-hmm. and as you move around, just so that perspective of mm-hmm. sound, when you get close to them as being farther away, that must be a real joy to have those resources to use.
It is. And particularly sound is like almost the subconscious level of movie making. It's where you talk to audience and then are not, apart from the dialogue, they're not necessarily that aware of you talking with them. And that's so exciting and interesting.
You keep saying a conversation with the audience. And how long have you thought about the films as being that, as kind of being a conversation with the people, the filmgoers? Has it always been that way for you?
I think I've always thought about it like that. I think I always kind of knew that, you know, it is about communicating and it is about conveying whatever you think is meaningful or interesting or fun or important. I don't mean to say that I at all times have the audience in the back of my mind, but I do mean to say that, you know, filmmakers who just do them for themselves, which has been incredibly fashionable in Europe for a few years, I think are sort of missing the point.
I won't bring up the words dogma again, but I think we know what we're getting at here. But I just find there's, like I said, there's a real kind of free-floating quality to these movies. I mean, you think about, for me, After the Wedding and this movie are kind of bookends about people who are kind of lost trying to find a way to connect with either real family or people who mean something to them and looking for community.
I actually think we are really fascinated by the modern, the contemporary hero in a funny way. Like people who really want to do the right thing. They really want to be decent. They are really strong people and they're still very, very flawed. And I just think, firstly, I think it's interesting. And then I think it's also very truthful. And I think probably all of us, if we were honest, we would figure that that's possibly the case.
Wow, words to live by. But what happens in the movie for both father and son is that idea of decency, and not morality, but decency. Mm-hmm. I think there's a you make the division here, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Becomes a life or death decision for both father and son.
Yes, that's right, it does. But it's a kind of like, you know, the intentions are good. And even for Christian, the boy who becomes really severe and in a way becomes almost dangerous, you can say that in the bottom of his heart, his intentions are good. He's just really on the wrong track. He's just really on a very, very dangerous and severe track. And so I think it is about wanting to be decent and not necessarily at all times being capable of it.
But I think that's also a line that runs through your films as well, that sort of difference between morality, which is very rigid, and decency, which is defined in the situation by each person.
I also think it is about morality, because I think the movie also does sort of address bigger moral issues like revenge as opposed to forgiveness. It does not address them in a rigid manner, because it really isn't black and white. It really kind of understands, like, for example, it understands the desire for revenge. It understands the desire to bring back a sense of justice, which is what revenge really in its core is about. But it also suggests that you are not going to get the satisfaction you're after. So it is... It addresses the issues, but it's not judgmental, and it not doesn't. I mean, I personally believe that forgiveness is much more healthy than revenge, but the movie is not like bombastic or clear cut about it, because there are also things you cannot forgive.
I hope you can forgive me. It's The Treatment. My guest is director Susanna Beer, whose new film is In a Better World. I think though. Again, thinking about the differences between the last two films feeling like bookends to me, both sort of starting off with a guy who seems sort of like possessed and knowing who he is and being basically taken out of his homeland, and we get to see a different definition of him when he's away from home. And that's something that seems to, for you and your writer, be a kind of a interesting thing to play with as well.
But that has to do with the thing you spoke about earlier about decency, because I think in a way one of the things for modern human beings is that there is a... Like, I think we all have a... Or many of us have a kind of concern about third world, or about, you know, poor people in our community. I think there is a kind of concern about that, and I think many of us want to do something about it. And I think that whole landscape of wanting to deal with that and a lacking ability to deal with our own life at the same time is truly interesting.
But also, because After the Wedding goes back and forth between Denmark and India, and this film is Africa and Denmark, it's also about that kind of having to understand what you represent in some place that's not your homeland, which is also basically having to understand yourself and as well as understand your impact on that land.
But also there, I think what you also understand, and one of the points that the movie is making, is that we are more similar than we are different. Even if the living conditions are extremely different, as I said, the similarities are much stronger.
It just makes me wonder, the question I've had about for you after the movies, what do you feel like when you travel? I mean, do you feel at home when you travel, or do you feel dislocated and alienated?
I do feel very much at home travel. And I do feel pretty much at home many different places.
Because you're making so many movies about people looking for homes.
Yes. Well, I'm Jewish. I think, you know. I think it's, you know, ingrained in the sort of Jewish cultural history is a sort of sense
of
belonging in different places.
Yeah, and looking for a homeland as
yes.
well. But I'm just struck by that in the films, that these are, getting back to what you're talking about before, understanding men better than women. and these are men who on some level are incredibly kind of lost and lonely, and part of that is not just looking for people, again, their tribes, Jew, black, we can talk about tribes, but also looking for a place that feels like home to them. And at some point in the movie you just sort of get the sense of these guys being incredibly like separated from where they are, from their hearts, from where they need to be.
I think you're right, and I think it's a contemporary phenomenon, that sort of the ability to be at home many places is also a funny inability to really be stuck in one place. And being stuck in one place has some real qualities which you cannot achieve if you are too easily dislocated. And it does fascinate me, and it always has.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. I'm talking to director Susanna Beer about her Oscar-winning film, In a Better World.
And I guess I just found there's so much going on in this movie. This is such a richer piece of material for you. I just wonder if, as a director, you felt like you had to make this movie at this time because you were more ready to make it than you would have been maybe, say, 5 years ago or so. Because there's a lot going on, and maybe a lot more, I think, than the other movies.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that. I clearly felt that. I clearly felt while shooting that this is a movie I have to make. And it's, you know, I had an extremely strong urge to do it, and I felt like, you know, it was kind of exhilarating, because I think for any filmmaker, you at times feel that some movies are more, comes easier to you than others, and this one, just a very happy experience doing it.
I wonder if you ever thought about just doing a comedy, because there are comic touches in all of your films.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Are you? Oh, good.
Well, the thing is, Mr. Jensen and I have written like a romantic comedy, but I think they're comic touch to all of them, but I think I probably have a strong melancholic side as well. And
I would say based on the movies, that's kind of evident.
Yeah, so I doubt that it will, you know, I don't think that it's going to look like a classical romantic comedy, but I think it's going to be lighter and less thematical, but possibly very cute love story.
But as we were just saying, though, talking about the movies, even when there's a moment, a light moment, kind of a comic moment, there's like another or an undercurrent. There's always something else going on. So it's not just comedy. There's always kind of this, like, again, when the dad is sitting and having to be told that his son is dealing badly with bullies, that's kind of funny and awful at the same time.
Yeah, and the teachers are not, you know, they're not as insightful as
they're,
you would
not equipped
want
to deal with it. They're complete idiots, and his wife is having to sort of explain to him and to the teachers that everybody's handling this wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I think Mr. Jensen has a slight issue with authorities, and this is one way for him to get at it. Because I don't have an issue with authority.
But the films all deal with that, too. There's this kind of strong anti-authoritarian streak. And it's often the women who are assessing these institutions as being completely wrongheaded.
I actually think both Mr. Jensen and I have a strong aggression to authorities. And I actually try to restrain myself, and I try to be respectful. But underneath, you kind of, anybody who has a right to say things to you, I kind of, you kind of get mad at.
You know, people criticizing your cooking, for example.
That's right. Well, then, I mean, that's just where I get hurt and upset.
Well, I can't wait to have you come back and talk about this some more. But we're out of time, Suzanne. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I guess this is Susanna Beer. As director, her new film is In a Better World. Our recording engineer at NPR West is Theo Mondel. The show is mixed by J.C. Swadek. It is edited and produced by Gemma Dempsey. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.